Captain Quirk looked around the watchroom with the air of one who was doing the scenery a favour by glancing at it. "Nice place, this," he said. "I think we'll move in here. Better than the quarters near the palace."
"But we're here," said Sergeant Colon.
"You'll just have to squash up," said Captain Quirk. He glanced at Angua. Her stare was getting on his nerves.
"There'll be a few changes, too," he said.
Behind him, the door creaked open. A small, smelly dog limped in.
"But Lord Vetinari hasn't said who's commanding Night Watch," said Carrot.
"Who, yes? Seems to me,
said Quirk,
"that it's not likely to be one of you lot, eh? Seems to me it's likely to be the watches'll be combined. Seems to me there's too much sloppiness around the place. Seems to me there's a bit too much of a ragtag."
He glanced at Angua again. The way she was looking at him was putting him off.
"Seems to me," Quirk began again, and then noticed the dog. "Look at this," he said. "Dogs in the watch house."
He kicked Gaspode hard and grinned as the dog ran yelping under the table.
"What about Lettuce Nibs, the beggar girl?" said Angua. "No troll killed her, or the clown."
"You got to see the big picture," said Quirk.
"Mr. Captain," said a low voice from under the table, audible at a conscious level only to Angua, "you got an itchy bottom."
"What big picture's this, then?" said Sergeant Colon.
"Got to think in terms of the whole city," said Quirk. He shifted uneasily.
"Really itchy," said the sub-table voice.
"You feeling all right, Captain Quirk?" said Angua.
The captain squirmed.
"Prickle, prickle, prickle," said the voice.
"I mean, some things are important, some ain't," said Quirk.
"Ugh! Sorry?"
"Prickle!
Can't hang around here talking to you all day," said Quirk. "You, report to me tomorrow afternoon. Prickle, prickle, prickle. About face."
The day watch scurried out, with Quirk hopping and squirming in, as it were, the rear.
"My word, he seemed anxious to get away," said Carrot.
"Yes," said Angua. "Can't think why."
They looked at one another.
"Is that it?" said Carrot.
"No more night watch?"
It's generally very quiet in the unseen university library. There's perhaps the shuffling of feet as wizards wander between the shelves, the occasional hacking cough to disturb the academic silence, and every once in a while a dying scream as an unwary student fails to treat an old magical book with the caution it deserves. Consider orangutans. In all the worlds graced by their presence, it is suspected that they can talk but choose not to do so in case humans put them to work, possibly in the television industry. In fact, they can talk, it's just that they talk in orangutan. Humans are only capable of listening in bewilderment. The librarian of Unseen University had unilaterally decided to aid comprehension by producing an orangutan-to-human dictionary. He'd been working on it for 3 months. It wasn't easy. He'd got as far as ook, which can mean, well, meanings include pardon me, you're hanging from my rubber ring, thank you so very much. It may just be vital biomass oxygenating the planet to you, but it's home to me. And I'm sure there was a rainforest around here a moment ago. He was down in the stacks where it was cool, and suddenly someone was singing. He took the pen out of his foot and listened. A human would have decided they couldn't believe their ears. Orangs are more sensible. If you won't believe your own ears, whose ears will you believe? Someone was singing underground, or trying to sing. The chthonic voices went something like this.
Glue, 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 glue. Listen, you troll, it's the simplest song there is. Look, like this. Gold, 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 gold.
Gold, 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 gold.
No, that's the second verse.
There was also the rhythmical sound of dirt being shovelled and rubble being moved. The librarian considered matters for a while. So, a dwarf and a troll. He preferred both species to humans. For one thing, neither of them were great readers. The librarian was, of course, very much in favour of reading in general, but readers in particular got on his nerves. There was something, well, sacrilegious about the way they kept taking books off the shelves and wearing out the words by reading them. He liked people who loved and respected books and the best way to do that, in the librarian's opinion, was to leave them on the shelves where nature intended them to be. The muffled voices seemed to be getting closer.
Gold, 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 gold.
Now you're singing the chorus!
On the other hand, there were proper ways of entering a library. He waddled over to the shelves and selected Hump Tulip's seminal work, How to Kill Insects. All 2,000 pages of it. Vimes felt quite light-hearted as he walked up Schoon Avenue. He was aware that there was an inner Vimes screaming his head off. He ignored him. You couldn't be a real copper in Ankh-Morpork and stay sane. You had to care. And caring in Ankh-Morpork was like opening a tin of meat in the middle of a piranha school. Everyone dealt with it in their own way. Colon never thought about it, and Nobby didn't worry about it, and the new ones hadn't been in long enough to be worn down by it, and Carrot was just himself. Hundreds of people died in the city every day, often of suicide. So what did a few more matter? The Vimes inside hammered on the walls. There were quite a few coaches outside the Ramkin mansion, and the place seemed to be infested with assorted female relatives and interchangeable Emmas. They were baking things and polishing things. Vimes strolled through, more or less unregarded. He found Sybil out in the dragon house, in her rubber boots and protective dragon armour. She was mucking out, apparently blissfully unaware of the controlled uproar in the mansion. She looked up as the door shut behind Vimes.
"Oh, there you are. You're home early," she said. "I couldn't stand the fuss, so I came out here. I'll have to go and change soon."
She stopped when she saw his expression. "There's something wrong, isn't there?"
"I'm not going back," said Vimes.
"Really? Last week you said you'd do a full watch. You said you were looking forward to it."
"Not much gets past old Sybil," Vimes thought.
She patted his hand.
"I'm glad you're out of it," she said.
Corporal Nobbs darted into the watch house and slammed the door behind him.
"Well," said Carrot.
"It's no good," said Nobby. "They say the trolls are planning to march to the palace to get Coalface out. There's gangs of dwarfs and trolls wandering around looking for trouble, and beggars. Lettuce was very popular, and there's a lot of guild people out there too. The city," he said importantly, "is definitely a keg of number one powder."
"How do you like the idea of camping out on the open plain?" said Colon.
"What's that got to do with it?"
"If anyone puts a match to anything tonight, it's goodbye, Ankh," said the sergeant morosely. "Usually we can shut the city gates right, but there's hardly more than a few feet of water in the river."
"You flood the city just to put out fires?" said Angua.
"Yep." "Another thing," said Nobby. "People throw stuff at me."
Carrot had been staring at the wall. Now he produced a small, battered black book from his pocket and started to thumb through the pages.
"Tell me," he said in a slightly distant voice, "has there been an irretrievable breakdown of law and order?"
"Yeah, for about 500 years," said Colon. "Irretrievable breakdown of law and orders is what Ankh-Morpork is all about."
"No, I mean more than usual. It's important,"
Carrot turned a page. His lips moved silently as he read.
"Throwing stuff at me sounds like a breakdown in law and order," said Nobby.
He was aware of their expressions.
"I don't think we could make that stick,"
said Colon.
"It stuck all right, and some of it went down me shirt."
"Why throw things at you?" said Angua.
"It's 'cause I was a watchman," said Nobby. "The dwarfs don't like the watch because of Mr. Hammerhock, and the trolls don't like the watch because of Coalface being arrested, and people don't like the watch because of all these angry dwarfs and trolls around."
Someone thumped at the door.
"That's probably an angry mob right now," said Nobby.
Carrot opened the door.
"It's not an angry mob," he announced.
"Ooh.
It's an orangutan carrying a stunned dwarf followed by a troll. But he is quite angry, if that's any help."
Lady Ramkin's butler Willikins had filled him a big bath. Tomorrow it'd be his butler and his bath. And this wasn't one of the old hip bath, drag it in front of the fire jobs, no. The Ramkin mansion collected water off the roof into a big cistern after straining out the pigeons, and then it was heated by an ancient geezer, who stoked the boiler, and flowed along, drumming, groaning lead pipes to a pair of mighty brass taps, and then into an enamelled tub. There were things laid out on a fluffy towel beside it, huge scrubbing brushes, three kinds of soap, a loofah. Willikins was standing patiently beside the bath like a barely heated towel rail.
"Yes," said Vimes. "His lordship, that is, her ladyship's father, "'He required to have his back scrubbed,' said Willikins.
"'You go and help the old geezer stoke the furnace,' said Vimes firmly.
Left alone, he struggled out of his breastplate and threw it in the corner. The chainmail shirt followed it, and the helmet, and the money pouch, and various leather and cotton oddments that came between a watchman and the world. And then he sank, gingerly at first, into the suds.
"'Try soap! Soap'll work!' said Detritus.
"'Hold still, will you?' said Carrot.
"'You're twisting my head off!'
"'Go on, soap him head!'
"'Soap your own head!'
There was a thung noise, and Cuddy's helmet came free. Cuddy emerged, blinking into the light. He focused on the librarian and growled.
"'He hit me on the head!'
"'Ooh!'
"'He says you came up through the floor,' said Carrot.
"'That's no reason to hit me on the head!'
"'Some of the things that come up through the floor at Unseen University don't even have a head,' said Carrot.
"'Ook!
Or they have hundreds. Why were you digging down there?'
"'We weren't digging down, we were digging up!'
Carrot sat and listened. He interrupted only twice.
"'Shot at you?'
"'Five time,' said Detritus happily. "'Have to report damage to breastplate, but not to backplate, on account of fortunately my body got in the way, saving valuable city property worth $3.'
Carrot listened some more.
"'Sewers?' he said eventually.
"'It's like the whole city underground. We saw crowns and stuff carved on the walls.'
Carrot's eyes sparkled.
"'That means they must date right back to the days when we had kings. And then when we kept on rebuilding the city, we forgot they were down there.'
That's not all that's down there,' said Cuddy. "'We found something.'
"'Oh?
Something bad.'
"'You won't like it at all,' said Detritus. "'Bad, bad, bad, bad. Even worse.'
"'We thought it would be best to leave it there,' said Cuddy, "'on account of it being evidence. But you ought to see it.'
"'It's going to upset everything,' said the troll, warming to the part.
"'What was it?'
"'If we tell you, you say stupid ethnic people, you pulling my leg off,' said Detritus.
"'So you'd better come and see,' said Cuddy.
Sergeant Colon looked at the rest of the watch. "'All of us,' he said nervously. "'Shouldn't a couple of senior officers stay up here in case anything happens?'
"'Do you mean in case anything happens up here?' said Angua tartly. "'Or in case anything happens down there?'
"'I'll go with Lance Constable Cuddy and Lance Constable Detritus,' said Carrot. "'I don't think anyone else ought to come.'
"'But it could be dangerous,' said Angua.
"'If I find out who's been shooting at watchmen,' said Carrot, "'it will be.' Samuel Vimes reached up with a big toe and turned on the hot tap. There was a respectful knock at the door, and Willikins, old retainered, in.
"'Would sir be wanting anything?'
Vimes thought about it.
"'Lady Ramkin said you wouldn't be wanting any alcohol,' said Willikins, as if reading his thoughts.
"'Did she?'
"'Emphatically, sir. But I have here a very fine cigar.'
He winced as Vimes bit the end off and spat it over the side of the bath, but produced some matches and lit it for him.
"'Thank you, Willikins. What's your first name?'
"'First name, sir?'
"'I mean, what do people call you when they've got to know you better?'
"'Willikins, sir.'
"'Oh, right then. Well, you may go, Willikins.'
"'Yes, sir.'
Vimes lay back in the warm water. The inner voice was still in there somewhere, but he tried not to pay any attention. About now it was saying, you'd be proceeding along the street of small gods, just by the bit of old city wall where you could stop and smoke a roll-up out of the wind. To drown it out, he started to sing at the top of his voice. The cavernous sewers under the city echoed with human and near-human voices for the first time in millennia.
Hi-ho!
Hi-ho!
Ook, ook, ook!
You are stupid!
I can't help it, it's my nearly dwarfish blood. We just like singing underground, it comes naturally to us.
All right, but why him singing? Him ape?
He's a people person.
They'd brought torches. Shadows jumped among the pillars in the big cavern and fled along the tunnels. Whatever the possible lurking dangers, Carrot was beside himself with the joy of discovery.
It's amazing. The Via Cloaca is mentioned in some old book I read, but everyone thought it was a lost street. Superb workmanship. Lucky for you, the river was so low. It looks as though these are normally full of water.
That's what I said, said Cuddy. Full of water, I said.
He glanced cautiously at the dancing shadows, which made weird and worrying shapes on the far wall. Strange biped animals, eldritch underground things. Carrot sighed.
Stop making shadow pictures, Detritus.
Ooh. What him say?
He said, do deformed rabbit, it's my favourite,
Carrot translated. Rats rustled in the darkness. Cuddy peered around. He kept imagining figures back there, sighting along some kind of pipe. There was a disturbing few moments when he lost sight of the tracks on the whetstone, but he picked them up again near a mould-hung wall. And then there was the particular pipe. He'd made a scratch on the stones.
It's not far along, he said, handing Carrot the torch.
Carrot disappeared. They heard his footsteps in the mud, and then a whistle of surprise, and then silence for a while. Carrot reappeared.
My word, he said. You two know who this is?
It looks like,
Cuddy began.
It looks like trouble, said Carrot.
You see why we didn't bring it back up, said Cuddy. Carrying a human's corpse through the streets right now would not be a good idea, I thought. Especially this one.
I thought some of that too, Detritus volunteered.
Right enough, said Carrot. Well done, men. I think we'd better leave it for now and come back with a sack later on. And don't tell anyone else.
Except the sergeant and everyone, said Cuddy.
No, not even them. It'd make everyone very jumpy.
Just as you say, Corporal Carrot.
We're dealing with a sick mind here, men. Underground light dawned on Cuddy.
Ah, he said. You suspect Corporal Nobbs, sir?
This is worse. Come on, let's get back up. He looked back towards the big pillar-barred cavern. Any idea where we are, Cuddy?
Could be under the palace, sir.
That's what I reckoned. Of course, the tunnels go everywhere. Carrot's worried train of thought faltered away on some distant track. There was water in the sewers, even in this drought. Springs flowed into them, or water filtered down from far above. Everywhere was the drip and splash of water and cool, cool air. It would almost be pleasant were it not for the sad, hunched corpse of someone that looked for all the world like Beano the Clown. Vimes dried himself off. Willikins had also laid out a dressing gown with brocade on the sleeves. He put it on and wandered into his dressing room. That was another new thing. The rich even had rooms for dressing in, and clothes to wear while you went into the dressing rooms to get dressed. Fresh clothes had been laid out for him. Tonight there was something dashing in red and yellow. About now he'd be patrolling Treacle Mine Road. And a hat. It had a feather in it. Vimes dressed himself, and even wore the hat, and he seemed quite normal and composed until you realised that he avoided meeting his own gaze in the mirror. The watch sat around the big table in the guardroom, and in deep gloom. They were off duty. They'd never really been off duty before.
"What say we have a game of cards?"
said Nobby, brightly. He produced a greasy pack from somewhere in the noisome recesses of his uniform.
"You won everyone's wages off them yesterday," said Sergeant Colon. "Now's a chance to win them back, then." "Yeah, but there were five kings in your hand, Nobby."
Nobby shuffled the cards.
"It's funny that," he said. "There's kings everywhere when you look." "There certainly is if you look up your sleeve." "No, I mean there's kings weighing onk, and kings in cards, and we get the king's shilling when we join up," said Nobby. "We've got kings all over the place, except on that gold throne in the palace. I'll tell you, there wouldn't be all this trouble around the place if we had a king."
Carrot was staring at the ceiling, his eyebrows locked in concentration. Detritus was counting on his fingers.
"Oh, yes," said Sergeant Colon. "Beer'd be a penny a pint. The trees'd bloom again. Oh, yeah, every time someone stubs a toe in this town, turns out it wouldn't have happened if there'd been a king. Vimes'd go spare to hear you talk like that."
"People'd listen to a king, though," said Nobby.
"Vimes'd say that's the trouble," said Colon. "It's like that thing of his about using magic. That stuff makes him angry."
"How you get a king in the first place?" said Detritus.
"Someone sawed up a stone," said Colon.
"Ah, anti-siliconism."
"Nah, someone pulled a sword out of a stone," said Nobby. "How do you know it was there, then?"
Colon demanded.
It was sticking out, wasn't it? Where anyone could have grabbed it, in this town? Only the rightful king could do it, see?" said Nobby.
"Oh, right," said Colon. "I understand. Oh, yes, so what you're saying is someone had decided who the rightful king was before he pulled it out? Sounds like a fix to me. Probably someone had a fake hollow stone and some dwarf inside hanging on the other end with a pair of pliers until the right guy came along."
A fly bounced on the windowpane for a while, then zigzagged across the room and settled on a beam where Cuddy's idly thrown axe cut it in half.
"You got no soul, Fred," said Nobby. "I wouldn't have minded being a knight in shining armour. That's what a king does if you're useful. He makes you a knight."
"A knight watchman in crappy armour is about your métier," said Colon, who looked around proudly to see if anyone had noticed the slanty thing over the E.
"Nah, catch me being respectful to some bloke because he just pulled a sword out of a stone. That don't make you a king."
"Mind you," he said, "someone who could shove a sword into a stone. A man like that, now he's a king."
"A man like that would be an ace," said Nobby.
Angua yawned. Ding, 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 ding.
"What the hell's that?" said Colon.
Carrot's chair thumped forward. He fumbled in his pocket and pulled out a velvet bag, which he upended on the table. Out slid a golden disc about 3 inches across. When he pressed a catch on one side, it opened like a clamshell. The stopped watch peered at it.
"It's a clock," said Angua.
"A watch," said Carrot.
"It's very big."
"That's because of the clockwork. There has to be room for all the little wheels. The small watches just have those little time demons in, and they don't last anyway. They keep rotten time.
Ding, 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 ding."
"And it plays a tune," said Angua.
"Every hour," said Carrot. "It's part of the clockwork.
Ding, 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 ding."
"And it chimes the hours afterwards," said Carrot.
"It's slow, then," said Sergeant Colon. "All the others just struck. You couldn't miss them." "My cousin Jorgen makes ones like these," said Cuddy. "They keep better time than demons or water clocks or candles, or those big pendulum things."
"There's a spring and wheels," said Carrot.
"The important bit," said Cuddy, taking an eyeglass from somewhere in his beard and examining the watch carefully, "is a little rocking thing of me that stops the wheels from going too fast."
"How does it know if they're going too fast?" said Angua.
"It's kind of built in," said Cuddy. "Don't understand it much myself. What's this inscription here?"
He read it aloud.
"A watch from your old friends in the watch."
"It's a play on words," said Carrot. There was a long, embarrassed silence.
"I chipped in a few dollars each from you new recruits," he added, blushing. "I mean, you can pay me back when you like, if you want to. I mean, you'd be bound to be friends once you'd got to know him."
The rest of the watch exchanged glances.
"He could lead armies," Angua thought. "He really could. Some people have inspired whole countries to great deeds because of the power of their vision. And so could he. Not because he dreams about marching hordes or world domination or an empire of 1,000 years. Just because he thinks that everyone's really decent underneath and would get along just fine if only they made the effort. And he believes that so strongly. It burns like a flame which is bigger than he is. He's got a dream and we're all part of it. So that it shapes the world around him. And the weird thing is that no one wants to disappoint him. It'd be like kicking the biggest puppy in the universe. It's a kind of magic."
"The gold's rubbing off," said Cuddy, "but it's a good watch," he added quickly.
"I was hoping we could give it to him tonight," said Carrot, "and all go out for a drink."
"Not a good idea," said Angua.
"Leave it until tomorrow," said Colon. "We'll form a guard of honour at the wedding. That's traditional. Everyone holds their swords up in a kind of arch."
"We've only got one sword between us," said Carrot glumly.
They all stared at the floor.
"'It's not fair,' said Angua. "'I don't care who stole whatever they stole from the assassins, "'but he was right to try and find who killed Mr. Hammerhock, "'and no one cares about Lettuce Nibs.'
"'I like to find out who shoot me,' said Detritus.
"'Beats me why anyone would be daft enough to steal from the assassins,' said Carrot. "'That's what Captain Vimes said. "'He said you'd have to be a fool to think of breaking into that place.' "'They stared at the floor again.'
"'Like a clown, or a jester,' said Detritus.
"'Detritus, he didn't mean a cap and bells fool,' said Carrot, in a kindly voice. "'He just meant you'd have to be some sort of idiot.' He stopped. He stared at the ceiling. "'Oh, my,' he said. "'It's as simple as that?'
"'Simple as what?' said Angua.
Someone hammered at the door. It wasn't a polite knock. It was the thumping of someone who was either going to have the door open for them or break it down.' A guard stumbled into the room. Half his armour was off and he had a black eye, but he was just recognisable as Scully Muldoon of the Day Watch. Colon helped him up.
"'Been in a fight, Scully?'
Scully looked up at Detritus and whimpered.
"'The buggers attacked the watch house!'
"'Who?
Them!'
Carrot patted him on the shoulder. "'This isn't a troll,' he said. "'This is Lance Constable Detritus. Don't salute. Trolls attacked the Day Watch.
"'They're chucking cobbles!'
"'You can't trust them,' said Detritus.
"'Who?' said Cully. "'Trolls.
Nasty pieces of work, in my opinion,' said Detritus, with all the conviction of a troll with a badge.
"'They need keeping an eye on.'
"'What's happened to Quirk?' said Carrot.
"'I don't know. You lot have got to do something.'
"'We're stood down,' said Colon. "'Official.
Oh, don't give me that.'
"'Ah,' said Carrot, brightly. He pulled a stub of pencil out of his pocket and made a little tick in his black book. "'You still got that little house in Easy Street, Sergeant Muldoon?'
"'What? Well, yes, what about it?
"'Is the rent worth more than a farthing a month?' Muldoon stared at him with his one operating eye.
"'Are you simple or what?'
Carrot gave him a big smile. "'That's right, Sergeant Muldoon. Is it, though, worth a farthing, would you say?'
"'There's dwarfs running around the streets looking for a fight, "'and you want to know about property prices? "'A farthing? "'Don't be daft, it's worth at least $5 a month.'
"'Ah,' said Carrot, ticking the book again. "'That'd be inflation, of course, and I expect you've got a cooking pot. "'Do you own at least 2 1/3 acres and more than half a cow?'
all right,' said Muldoon. "'It's some kind of joke, right?'
"'I think probably the property qualification can be waived.' said Carrot. It says here that it can be waived for a citizen in good standing. Finally, has there been, in your opinion, an irreparable breakdown of law and order in the city?
They turned over Throat Dibbler's barrow and made him eat two of his sausages in a bun.
Oh, I see, said Colon.
Without mustard?
I think we can call that a yes, said Carrot. He ticked the page again and closed the book with a definite snap. We'd better be going, he said.
"'We were told,' Colon began.
"'According to the laws and ordinances of Ankh-Morpork,' said Carrot, "'any residents of the city, in times of the irreparable breakdown of law and order, "'shall, at the request of an officer to the city, who is a citizen in good standing,' "'there's a lot of stuff here about property and stuff, "'and then it goes on, "'form themselves into a militia for city defence.'
"'What does that mean?' said Angua.
"'Militia?'
mused Sergeant Colon.
"'Hang on, you can't do that,' said Muldoon. "'That's nonsense.'
"'It's the law. Never been repealed,' said Carrot.
"'We've never had a militia. We never needed one.'
"'Until now, I think.'
"'Now look here,' said Muldoon. "'You come back with me to the palace. Your men are the watch.'
"'And we're going to defend the city,' said Carrot.